This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Welcome to Keeping the Faith. Our guest today is Carolyn Treadway, who we're going to be talking about climate change. Carolyn, can you hear me all right? Carolyn, are you there? Let's see. Can you hear me, Carolyn?
Yes, I'm hearing you just fine.
Oh, very good. And
are you hearing me?
Yes, I am.
Good.
Great. Now, we're talking to you by phone from where? Where are you?
From Normal, Illinois.
Normal, Illinois. Not too far. And what do you do in Normal, Illinois, ordinarily?
Well, ordinarily, when I'm not working on climate issues, I'm a therapist and personal life coach. And it's my special passion to coach people about sustainability in their own lives, not just sustainability about use of resources, but how they can live in a way that they can sustain themselves and not use themselves up, because that's what's happening to our world, and that's what's happening to people.
Now, you were trained with from Al Gore's The Climate Project.
Right.
What interested you about that?
Well, in summer 2006, I saw the movie An Inconvenient Truth, which features Al Gore giving a climate presentation. And it impacted me greatly, and I wanted to do something, but I didn't know what to do. So I went to his website, or the website connected with that movie, which is climatecrisis.org, theclimatecrisis.org, and I saw on there that he was doing some training for what he would call his 1,000 messengers to take the climate crisis message across the land at the grassroots level. And I looked at that and I said, that's for me. So I applied online and I was thrilled to be accepted for that training.
Now, what did they seem to be looking for these 1,000 messengers or evangelists, I suppose we could say?
1,000 very concerned people, anyway. I don't know what their criterion was. I know that many more thousands applied than were accepted, and so I don't know why I was, except that I had already been doing some climate work before that. So I just was very happy to be accepted.
Tell us a
little. They were looking for people who would take the message out in their own communities and give at least 10 presentations in the year. I've given far more than that.
Now, tell us a little bit about what was involved in your quick education on climate change.
Right. We went to Nashville, which is Al Gore's hometown now, and there were several hundred of us in this training, and Al Gore himself trained us for the 3 days, which was a unique treat. He also had there on standby top climate scientists and environmental educators, and they put in a few comments. They were there as resources, but Al Gore himself did the training.
What did the training consist of? What happened those 3 days?
He went through his slides. In the movie, he showed 275 climate slides, approximately, and he went through each one of those with us, and he talked about what was in it and how to present it and so on. He also gave us 600 slides, so we have about twice as many as were in the movie.
Now, you said you'd done some climate work before, so tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I've been concerned about issues of the environment and issues of peace and justice for a long time under many different rubrics. What I had done specifically most recently about the climate was Paramount Pictures and the Climate Project made an agreement with each other that, it wasn't the Climate Project, it was Interfaith Power and Light made an agreement with each other that the movie could be taken into different church groups. And this was before it was released on DVD. And so I signed up to be one of those people, and I took it into some churches in my community.
And for local listeners in Champaign-Urbana, some will remember that the same thing happened here. It was shown in several congregations, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, as well as in at the University Y. We were very pleased because of the Y's long-time work on environmental issues that we were able to show that before it was released to the theaters.
Great.
So there were a lot of students as well as community people who saw it when it was offered several times during a 2 or 3 day period at the Y.
Great.
And I take it you had a good response to that.
I did. And it kind of primed the pump, and then I wanted to do more of that, and joining on with the Climate Project was the way that I could do more of that.
Now, you say you've given more than 10 presentations the first year. When did you actually start?
I actually started giving presentations late last March. March 2007.
So almost a year.
And I've given 23 so far, and I've reached about 700 people individually or directly in the room.
And tell us some of the places you've given the presentation.
I've given it in different churches, as we mentioned above, and I've also given it on the university campuses of the three universities in Bloomington Normal, and in different classrooms and in different subgroups of those universities.
And
I've also given it to community groups. I gave it as the keynote to Illinois Sustainable Living and Wellness Expo last spring.
And how long does this presentation take?
Well, I redo the presentation for each group, and there are some sort of standard slides I always use, and then some I add and subtract. And I like to have an hour and a half. I've done it in an hour. I've even done it in a 25-minute rotary presentation. So it varies, but I'd like to have at least an hour. The presentation, by the way, is free. We can recoup our costs, like driving to Urbana for me, but we do not charge for the program at all.
Now, how long of a commitment have you made to be offering this information to groups that might be interested?
I'm ongoing with it. There's no end to my commitment, because there's no end to my commitment to try to help the climate crisis.
So people who might be interested in hearing either a 25-minute version, an hour version, or an hour-and-a-half version of this,
a two-hour version.
All right. How may they contact
they
you?
They may contact me by emailing me at carolyn@planetcare.us. So it's Carolyn, C-A-R-O-L-Y-N, planetcare, like caring for the planet, .us. And I chose that domain name because the care of the planet is up to us.
Let me repeat that. That's Carolyn, C-A-R-O-L-Y-N, @planetcare.us.
Right.
Great. Now, you said the presentation is free. You've told us how long it is. You've told us you're using the slides and the information you got from Al Gore.
Mm-hmm.
What can people expect if they go to see this? Now, some people will not have seen the movie at all. So
okay.
I take it you'll have to repeat some things. You'll present some of the things were also presented in the movie.
Right, right. And what you can expect in seeing the presentation is to have basic information about what is climate change, what is global warming. And then I like to, and also about things that are causing it and things that we can do to turn it around. I like to have time before and after the slideshow itself to raise some questions, maybe do some group processing, at least be available for questions and answers.
Okay. And how heavily booked are you over the next several months?
I have space. I am doing a couple of presentations in your town in the next few months. Would you like me to give you those dates and time?
Sure. Tell us about what happens in Champaign-Urbana.
Okay. Well, one of them you know, Steve, because it's at your Y, the YMCA, and that's on March 6th, which is the Thursday night at 6. And then another one is at Channing Murray on Thursday, April 24th, and that's being done by Channing Murray and the Quaker meeting there, and that's at 7:30 on April 24th. I'm giving a slideshow tomorrow on Focus the Nation here at Illinois State University in Normal. That's at 4 o'clock in Schrader Hall at room 138. But I'm hoping your campus is also signed on for Focus the Nation, and that there might be events on your own campus. And then I'm giving the presentation at the Illinois Sustainable Living and Wellness Expo held at Shirk Center at Wesleyan College on April 12th.
Since the first of these events in Champaign-Urbana will be on March 6th at the University YMCA, let me give a little bit more information about that. It will be at 6 p.m., and it'll be in Latzer Hall at the University Y. The Y is located on the corner of Chalmers and Wright Street. It's 1001 South Wright in Champaign. And there's a lot of one-way streets around there, but people can find parking at the corner of 6th and Chalmers, for example. By 6 o'clock, there's a free university lot that where people can park. So you don't need to be on the street and pay the high cost for the parking meters. There's also a university lot by the Grand Library. They're on Armory and Wright, Armory and 6th, so people can park there for this 6 o'clock presentation at the University Y. If you have questions, like to call the Y, it's 337-1500, 337-1500. Don't need to get tickets, don't need to make reservations. It's open to the public, and we have a very large room, so we're looking forward to your being there. Again, that's Thursday, March 6th at 6 p.m. at the University YMCA, Carolyn Treadway. Let me give phone numbers for our listeners who may have a question for Carolyn about climate change issues, about her presentation. The phone here at WILL in Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, if you're listening even on the internet somewhere, there's a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. So anywhere it's a long-distance call, in the continental U.S. at least, it's 1-800-222-9455. Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Steve Shoemaker talking with Carolyn Treadway, who's based in Normal, Illinois. How far will you travel to do this show, Carolyn?
Oh, any reasonable place in central Illinois, hopefully. Not farther than that.
And there are 1,000 people trained. How many others are in Illinois?
Right. There are a big cluster up in Chicagoland.
Sure.
I'm the only one in this part of Illinois. There are two in Springfield, and there's one down south by Carbondale.
Okay.
So I consider central Illinois my beat.
And if people from those areas happen to be listening to us, perhaps on the internet, may they contact you to find out about the other people closer to them, or should
they
go to theclimatecrisis.org?
They could do either one.
Okay.
Okay.
So the website is theclimatecrisis.org, or you may email carolyn@planetcare.us.
Okay. It's actually, also another website, which is theclimateproject.org, and that might be the better one for getting a speaker.
Great. Okay.
So I'd like to tell you some things about climate change. Would that be all right?
Please do.
People seem to think that that global warming means it's getting warmer, but it's really climate change. Global climate change is what we're talking about. And that means all kinds of things about the climate, warmer, colder, hotter, drier, and so on. Now, maybe listeners are aware of the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. This is an organization of thousands of scientists from 130 countries that just won the Nobel Prize for Peace along with Al Gore for their climate work. And they've released four reports, and these reports are the definitive reports that show that the climate is unequivocally changing. Unequivocally, the climate is changing. And with a very high level of confidence, 95% or more, most of those changes have been caused by human action since the Industrial Revolution. And so as industry releases, and our homes and our cars and everything else release more greenhouse gases, the atmosphere thickens and holds more of the heat, trapping it inside, and that's why we call it global warming. But global warming is not a linear process. It doesn't go in a straight line, and it's not predictable. So a temperature rise of 1 degree at the equator would be a temperature rise of about 12 degrees at the poles. And the IPCC, the scientists, have said that they project a temperature increase by the end of this century in the range of 2 degrees Fahrenheit to 11.5 degrees Fahrenheit, and that that would be enough to make very major consequences to our entire global climate. Some of these things we know already. We're seeing how temperatures are hotter than usual or colder than usual. To me, it's been a weird winter. We have winter, then we have fall, then we have spring, then we have winter again, and so on. But some of the impacts are pretty well known, like the melting of the glaciers worldwide. If the West Antarctic ice sheet were to melt or the Greenland ice were to melt, the global ocean, all over the globe, the ocean would rise 20 feet. It would inundate our coastal towns. It would wipe out little island nations, low-lying island nations, and so on. But it also means that things like having the glaciers melt affects the water supply. For instance, the Himalayan glaciers provide water for 40% of the world's population, feeding all those major rivers, the Indus, the Ganges, the Yellow, and so on. And if they don't have that water, you know, what is 40% of the Earth going to do without its water supply? It's changing ecological niches. It's changing how food can be produced. It's changing how the species are adapting and surviving. It's changing the acidity of the oceans. It's changing weather with more extreme heat waves, droughts, wildfires, floods, storms, and so on. All of these things are happening. Human health, and they're predicted to happen even more with business as usual. Shall I keep going, or shall I
let's reflect a little bit on some of the things you've told us. You've given us a lot of information, and listeners may have heard some of it before. But like me, there are a number of us who know some things about what scientists agree on, and we're confused about others. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the important things that I heard you say is that the likelihood of this being accurate has really been agreed upon by legitimate scientists around the world,
right?
Just to a tremendously high degree of certainty,
right?
The evidence is really not debatable about some of this, and yet people still seem to be at least some people seem to be very very skeptical. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think we have a lot that we will have to change if we take this seriously.
So there's that resistance.
We need to take this seriously because the longer we delay, the more steep the curve is going to be for the changes we have to make. And it is distressing to me how we keep on asking whether this is real when there is incredible evidence that there is major impacts already underway. And I don't care why they are. I just care that we pay attention to. I mean, even if I didn't believe they are caused by human action, I believe it's important that we make the changes that we know will make a difference. And I'm especially glad to be on a program about spirituality and keeping the faith, about spirituality and values and ethics and morals. Because to me, this is a profoundly spiritual, moral, and ethical issue. And we were given the gift of creation. Whoever you considered created it, God or otherwise, we are given this gift of creation. And I don't think we were given it to mess it up and destroy it. And there are so many things we can do that can change the direction of these climate predictors. If we don't change them, we're going to suffer more and more severe effects, more and more quickly. If we do make these changes, we will still have an impact because carbon dioxide remains in the atmosphere for 100 years. It isn't like we put it up today and it's gone next week. And so there, our changes are going to happen from what's already up there beyond what have happened now. But we can lower the rate quite a bit if we do so many things that we already know how to do. Now, would you like me to bring this home a little more closely to some of the impact on Illinois?
I would, but let me just reintroduce you so the people will know who's giving this information. This is Carolyn Treadway, who is a therapist and personal life coach living in Normal, Illinois. She's been involved in environmental issues for many years, and she took the training with Al Gore himself as part of the Climate Project, where 1,000 people have been trained by Vice President Gore to take the message about climate change around this country. So that's who we're talking to by phone from Normal. And Carolyn, we do have one call. Let's go to that call first, and then we'll focus in on particularly on Illinois.
Okay.
Yes. Go ahead with your question. Line number one.
Oh well, right on the air.
Great.
Thank you. Well, one thing I wanted to mention when you were talking about the variability and the fact that we should call it climate change and not global warming is Europeans are very worried about the Gulf Stream being turned off by the cold water changing the flow. And they expect to be colder because of climate change. So it has happened before in not even geologic time. It's happened in recent millennium.
Right, you are.
Turned off. So the people that are saying, well, I'm freezing, and I don't believe in global warming anymore. Or just, you know, they're not paying enough attention to the realities. But since this is a religious show, I wanted to test this on you and perhaps our host here. That we remember James Watt and sort of the apocalyptic Christians who don't think we have to really take care of the environment because, you know, we're in the denouement anyway, and we don't have to worry about taking care of things. But even beyond that, it seems to me there's something about the dominion that is said to be given to humankind over the earth seems to have a psychological effect on people that they don't believe, you know, that it can be translated into the need for stewardship, which is, I think, the admirable way of translating it. But I think there are other people that just sort of think, well, you know, it's ours to do what we want with, and you know, maybe they don't believe the Messiah is returning real soon, but I also get this idea that they might think that there's some arrogance of humankind involved in thinking that we can actually have this massive effect on the environment with just a little bit of carbon dioxide, a little bit of methane, a little bit of freon. But it seems to me that it's arrogant of humankind not to look at those possibilities and there's all this idea that faith that you know things will work out in a kind of a religious sense that it seems to be undergirding some people's. I have another point too that's not related to that, so maybe you want to try that first. And if there's another caller, I'll just bail away.
But. Well, we don't have another caller waiting, so let's respond to that first. And Carolyn, I might, since he included me, let me just give my own little thought on this. Late last year, I got to thinking about this coming back from a trip to the Holy Land, and I was in Palestine and Israel for a couple of weeks with my wife, and was just thinking about, you know, there we were down in the Dead Sea area, the lowest place on planet Earth, and where, you know, the Dead Sea has been there for millennia, but it's now drying up for various reasons, but part of it seems to be climate change. And I wrote a little, I'm not sure whether to call it a poem or something, but I titled it A Planetary Pledge. And I thought this might be the program to read it on. So it's not too long. Let me just read it.
Bravo.
We pledge allegiance to humanity, to this planet that sustains us all, to future children and their children. We promise to conserve the air, earth, water, and fuels needed by later inhabitants. We will work for peace, health, and education, for justice, hope, and worthy work for all. We will oppose those who divide and destroy, those who deny the divine in others, and those who abuse the creation. We choose to live in loving community with all who strive, at least sometimes, for the good, the beautiful, and the true, and to share and laugh, work, sing, and play with sisters and brothers around the world. So I called that a planetary pledge.
Lovely.
And I'll let our caller respond before you respond to his question. Caller, did you have any?
I was talking to your phone screen.
I'm sorry.
But I get the general idea, I think.
All right. Well, Carolyn, what was your response to our caller's concerns?
Well, I know that religion can be used for anything and everything, and you can find anything you want somewhere in religious teachings. I think that there has been a great deal of harm done to the planet by the view of dominion over, and also by the Western theological separation from persons and, you know, with the heavens above and the person below. This is very different than First Nation spirituality, for example, where we are all, you know, Earth, Mother, Sky, Father, Sky kind of thing. We are all one. We are all interconnected, which actually is the truth. And so if you don't care for the planet in your own life, you're going to be affected as well as everyone else on this planet. And somehow we have to wake up and realize that we are together as compatriots on a very small little spaceship called Blue Marble Earth. And we are on a finite Earth with finite resources. And I think the idea of stewardship, I think the idea of oneness with all, I think so many other ideas can be important in helping us see that we need to stop polluting our nest. You know, how is it that we have gotten this far into polluting our nest without even noticing that the life support systems of Earth are at risk for going down?
I remember C.S. Lewis talked about that blue marble Earth that he imagined before there were spaceships out that actually took photographs, but he pictured it in one of his science fiction novels, right. Perelandra, and that way. Caller, let's hear your second question. We do have another caller waiting.
Oh.
Yes, line number one. Whoops, we missed you. Okay. Well, perhaps he'll call back. Caller, we did lose you, but do call back. With your second question, but in the meantime, we'll go to line number four, which is our toll-free line. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. I'd like to ask your guest, as a, disciple of Al Gore, does it bother you that Al Gore was recently made a general partner of Kleiner Perkins, a venture capital firm, hoping to cash in on the fear of global warming? And second, does it bother you that Robert Redford called Gore a, quote, greedy opportunist, unquote, for trying to make a fortune out of the fears of global warming?
Yes, I'd be glad to respond to that. Al Gore is a wealthy man. He was a wealthy man. He is still a wealthy man. He is in a lot of positions of power. And it does not affect me or bother me, as you say, because I'm not in this for any political reason. I'm not doing this for Al Gore. I'm doing this for my grandson and all of his cohort group and all of their descendants and all the generations. And the glaciers don't care who's in office or who has what money. They just sit there and melt. And I saw that in a movie, and it just was very graphic for me. And that's what I care about. That's why I'm spending considerable energy and time on my part.
And you're doing you're doing this, Carolyn, as a volunteer.
Strictly as a volunteer.
Okay.
Right.
And the fact that Robert Redford called Mr. Gore a greedy opportunist, does that not call into question his credibility in your mind?
No, it doesn't.
All right.
And as I say, I'm not here for politics about it. Al Gore has been advised by the top climate scientists all over the world over a period of 30 years. And that's what I look at. And as I said earlier in the program, I'm not here to debate about whether it's real or exactly what's causing it or whatever. I'm here to invite people to join me in waking up and looking at what's happening and taking the actions in our own lives that can make so much difference. And that's what I'd love to talk about if I could have some time, Steve.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you, caller.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
And we have another caller on line number one. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I'll try not to take up too much time. I may be on the opposite end of the continuum in that I've been concerned about this problem for at least two decades.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to be so pessimistic, but I wonder if we are, in fact, past the tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, I mean given how cumbersome our process is, given the legislation that was recently passed, I think, in Washington regarding fuel emissions, which I thought was just so puny, just
mm-hmm.
pathetic.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my question or concern is, are we already too late?
Yes. Thank you, caller. This is the question that I wrestle with every single day. And do I expend my energy to go out there and give yet another presentation or to be on a radio talk show or whatever it is this time?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I spend my remaining years just living in gratitude for this life?
Mm-hmm.
I know that if what we don't know is whether we can turn the climate crisis around in time. We don't know that.
Exactly.
So for me to say, yes, we can, would not be faithful. But the Chinese characters that make up the ideograph for crisis are made up of the characters for danger and opportunity. We have enormous danger, and we have enormous opportunity because we are alive at a very unique time. And these next few years are going to make or break the difference. These next few years are so vital.
So you don't feel, Carolyn, that we are past the tipping point?
I don't know for sure.
Okay.
But I just this morning was reading the IPCC report, and they, as I said earlier on the program, there are already effects that are going to be in place from what carbon dioxide and other gases are in the air now, that the cumulative effect can be greatly decreased if we act now. But the longer we delay acting, then the steeper the curve. Now, the United States needs to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions by 80% by the year 2050, by 20% by the year 2030. For the minimum, what I consider the minimum, that would hold the greenhouse gases at 450 parts per million, that level or below. The higher the parts per million, the more devastating the changes. The sooner we act, the more quickly we can turn this around. So because we don't know, it's all the more of a challenge, all the more of an invitation, all the more of a call, in the religious sense of the word, to me, to keep acting, to do whatever I can, because it's almost unconscionable not to, for me. I'm not saying that for everybody, but for me, when I'm just so concerned about this and have given so much energy to it, it's a mystery, and I want to go to my grave and to be able to look my grandson in the eye and say, honey, I did everything I knew how to do.
Let me thank the caller and give the phone numbers again for others who'd like to ask our guest, Carolyn Treadway, who gives presentations on the climate for the Climate Project of Al Gore in our area. 333-9455 is the number in Champaign-Urbana. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. And we do have a caller already on line number two. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Hello.
Hi.
They just recently had a thing about touting the green control tower at O'Hare, how much energy it was saving and everything, and I thought, how utterly bizarre, one undelayed flight would probably make up for that green building in no time at all. And airplanes, they say, because the pollution is put into the stratosphere as opposed to down here, could be far more of a problem. They talk about green buildings where they're using corn husks as insulation, but they don't talk about the fact that they're taking the corn husks off the field and not plowing them under or using them to restore the field with fluorescent light bulbs. They save all this energy, but they have mercury in them, and you can't get rid of them properly. So I guess it just seems that nobody's dealing with all the particulars.
Carolyn, would you like to respond?
Yes, I'd like to respond to that, and I agree completely.
Thank you, caller.
I agree with you completely. Nobody's dealing with all the particulars. And everything is interconnected with everything else. And so if we're going to, so we need to develop ways to dispose of those complex fluorescent bulbs that will keep the mercury out of the landfill. There's no question about that.
And the most recent ones are better than the ones before.
Right. There's also no question that they do can save considerable energy and considerable money out of your own pocketbook if you do change to them. In fact, I think it's if every house in the United States would change just one incandescent bulb to one complex fluorescent, it would be the equivalent of taking over 6 million cars off the road. I think I kind of got lost in the different points about...
Well, she listed several specifics, but I think you responded to her general concern, and we do have another caller waiting. Let's go to line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Carolyn Treadway.
Hi, I'm would be very, very interested in hearing what she has to say about this particular area.
Great.
She said she was going to say it, but we've had a string of calls.
Sure.
Which were interesting also, but I would like to get that in before it's over.
Okay.
Thank you for reminding us. Let's go to that right now.
All right. I would like to recommend to readers that they go to the Union of Concerned Scientists website for more detailed information on this. And the UCSUSA.org.global underline warming has vast amounts of information about global warming, and they also have by region. And so they have a...
Give the website again, please, Carol.
UCSUSA.org and then /global_warming/.
Thanks.
And they're predicting that the climate, well, all over, the climate is shifting. It's getting warmer in the north and hotter in the south and so on. They predict that by 2030, our winters will be like Missouri is now.
Here in Illinois.
Yeah. For Illinois. In the winter, we'll be like Missouri, and in the summer, we'll be like Oklahoma and Arkansas by 2030. They say that by the end of this century, with business as usual, in the summer, it will be like East Texas is now, and the winters will be like Oklahoma is now. Now, if you think of a place in nature that you love, and you think of that place in Illinois, and you think of that place having the temperature of East Texas, what would happen to your place? You know, would it change greatly? Would it even still exist? They are predicting by the end of this century temperatures to rise in Illinois 9 to 18 degrees Fahrenheit in summer and 7 to 13 degrees Fahrenheit in winter. They're predicting much drier summers, and while the average precipitation might not change a whole lot, the summers would be drier because the rainfall cannot compensate for the drying effects of a warmer climate. And precipitation in winter would likely increase by 10 to 25%. We'll have summer droughts and drier soils. We'll have more heavy rainstorms and more extreme weather events. all of this will affect our water sources and our water supply. It will affect our agriculture a great deal. It will affect human health. Just think of that heat wave that came in Chicago in 1996, I believe it was, and it killed 700 people. I have yet to give a presentation and mention that fact where hands in the audience don't go up, where they said, yes, I remember that. I asked, do you remember that event? And the hands go up every single time. Infectious diseases will be on the rise. Our waterways will change. The rivers, the cold species fish will move north. These are just some of the things that will happen that will affect our recreation and tourism, as well as our basic agriculture and our basic human health. We'll have to have a lot more infrastructure in our cities and towns to deal with extreme weather events. Levels of lakes and rivers will decline, and that will more and more wetlands and floodplains will be gone, and that will have its effects in severe weather. Low levels of water will mean that more of the microbacteria at the bottom of lakes and so on emit the gases that have been trapped back in there, the greenhouse gases. So it will just, there will be less water, and more of the mercury and so on that's in the water will be in our fish. All these are projected changes. As I said, a Union of Concerned Scientists has a great deal more detail on that.
And again, for people who'd like to see the detail, the website is ucsusa.org/global_warming. Global warming. Okay, we're talking with Carolyn Treadway from the climateproject.org. People who would like to have Carolyn speak in her area, which is central Illinois, on this topic, she'll do it free, just with paying her travel expenses to get there, driving, I presume.
Yes.
I hope an energy efficient car.
Yes, in a Prius,
right.
Which gets 50 miles a gallon.
And you may go to the climateproject.org, or you may email her to arrange a presentation at carolyn@planetcare.us.
No, Planet Care.
Planet's Care.
Carolyn at planetcare.us.
.us, yes. Planet Care. All right. We still have a few minutes left. We could sneak in a couple other phone calls if people would like to call. 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455 is the toll-free line. Carolyn, tell us a bit about what we can do.
Oh, I'd love to do that. I think the most important thing is that we can wake up and stay awake. As I said before, it's astonishing to me that we've gotten this far into this mess without really noticing what was happening to our whole planet and our life support systems. And so if we're awake, then the thing is making the choices that help conserve energy and conserve resources. And how would you live your day if you knew that what you did amplified 6 billion times over for the population of the Earth was going to either increase or decrease the greenhouse gases and the global warming and the climate changes for our planet? How would you act? Another thing that strikes me is that there is no away anymore. We used to throw things away, but where is away? The landfill is part of our environment. We're treating our atmosphere like we treated the rivers. We used to dump all the junk in the rivers. And that doesn't work anymore. We've learned that the hard way. And so I think we can make a difference in our daily life, starting there and going all the way up to doing everything we can to influence legislation and supporting organizations that are working hard for reversing the climate crisis and so on. So what can we do on a daily basis? Every time you put every time you use a gallon of gas in your car, you're putting 20 pounds of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So So if you can use less, it helps. And, of course, walk, bike ride, take the bus, carpool, all those things. But as you drive, if you brake more slowly, if you accelerate more slowly, if you drive a little more slowly, all these things help also to keep that gallon of gas being used up quickly. You can also inflate your tires and clean your filters and make sure all your car systems are tuned up. That helps save gas. In our homes, we can make them energy efficient in so many ways, from complex fluorescent bulbs to wrapping the water heater to better insulation to better windows. Energy Star appliances, if you purchase them, may cost a little more at the beginning, but you will recoup the cost quickly because they save 25% to 40% of the energy used. If you, like I used to, have your appliances on standby so that you just click the on button and then the television pops on or your computer comes back on or something, you're still using approximately 20% of the electricity to power that, even though it's so-called off.
If you use a remote, that means that that machine is still on, waiting to get the signal from your wireless remote. So
right.
Anything you use with a remote, when you can turn it on with a remote, it's not really off.
And if you get a power strip and you plug the things into that and you turn off the power strip when you go to sleep at night and you turn it back on when you need to use it, you've saved that electricity because it really was off.
Very good. I want to continue with this, but I do also want to include another phone caller.
Okay.
So remember where you are, Carolyn, mm-hmm. on that list of very practical things that we can do.
All right.
And let's go to line number one for another call. Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. In the various debates and speeches and so forth connected with the presidential campaign, the issue of climate change comes up very, very little, considering how serious it is.
Right.
What should we do about that?
I think we should do about that the same thing we should do about climate change and every day, not just about an election, which is be asking about it, be talking about it, be thinking about it. So be calling in to the news stations that interview the reporters or the papers. Be calling into the candidates' offices and so on. What is your policy about global warming? What are you going to do? And to all of our elected officials from municipal levels on through the government of our nation, we need to be constantly letting them know of our concerns and that we want action about global warming. To me, it's just some days I feel overwhelmed with the idea that we need to reduce our emissions in the United States by 80% of what they were in 2000 by 2050 to have any semblance of this just not being a runaway thing. And that's a lot. But it's 2% a year between now and then, and that's not so much. So I agree with a former caller who said that the legislation of the energy bill really didn't have a lot of oomph to it, my words. And we are the people who elect our officials, and we need to be calling them and lobbying continuously for more teeth. We need to be more teeth in our legislation, stronger rules. We need to call our industries. We need to work in our office buildings and in our schools and in our churches and in our libraries. How are you making this building green? What is your policy about this? What is your long-range view?
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
And I think it's unconscionable that so few questions to the candidates for the election are being asked about global warming.
Tell us some more things very practically that can be done. Of course, let me just mention that in the Champaign-Urbana community, I don't know about Bloomington-Normal, But here, the first two buildings that are LEED certified were both done by religious organizations. Faith United Methodist Church, their last building was the first in this community to be LEED certified in terms of being energy efficient. Mm-hmm. And McKinley Foundation building of Presby Hall, their new residence facility right next to McKinley Presbyterian Church.
Great.
Heidi Weatherford and the pastor there and others, Keith Harris, have taking the lead to make sure that that's going to be LEED certifiable. Mm-hmm. So it takes a lot of extra money up front, but it really makes a difference in terms of energy efficiency, and hopefully we'll save money over the long term.
We have a almost model LEED building here in Normal, Bloomington Normal. It's the Workforce Center at Heartland Community College, which has met very high LEED standards.
Wonderful. And tell us some more things that can be done.
Okay. Well, there are the things at the personal level, as I was mentioning, in your home, in your car. When you go to the grocery, take cloth bags or recyclable bags. The production of plastic bags are billions a second, and they don't degrade, and they get into the oceans, and they get into the stomachs of wildlife, and they're just a scourge. There's no need for them. And they're petroleum-based, of course. When you have a choice, choose clean power. Work with your electricity providing companies to get renewable energy into their grid. Anything you can do to support renewable energy, to me, is so important. Wind power, solar power, and so on. Some people think that nuclear power is part of what can help. It is not. It is definitely not. Nuclear power is lethal for time limits beyond human comprehension or human life forms. And it's not necessary. And if you take the whole nuclear fuel cycle into account, it produces a great amount of greenhouse gases. The only time it doesn't is when it's in the fuel rod in the containment building.
And in terms of wind power that you mentioned, let me just brag on one of those WISE student programs again. Students for Environmental Concerns last year, under the leadership of our WISE student president, helped pass the second self-tax that the students voted for here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign to tax themselves $5 each semester.
Great.
To help produce money that would be take the lead in producing for the university wind power, renewable energy sources, and wind power is the first one. And the state has come up with some money, and it was helped by the wonderful group out of Chicago for the Clean Energy Community Foundation, Illinois Clean Energy Community Foundation.
Uh-huh.
And there are three wind generators that are going to be on this campus very soon. So,
wow.
So our WISE students really took the lead in that.
Wonderful.
And Joe Tang, our student president, who's now
wonderful.
Graduated, deserves a lot of credit.
Great. Well, I wish I could say the same for Illinois State. It doesn't have a wind tower coming up as far as I know, but it does have a brand new sustainability coordinator.
Great.
And her name is Enid Cardinal, and she is in charge of helping the whole of ISU become more green and sustainable. And she is a very busy lady.
Great. And there's a similar position here.
Good.
They do wonderful work. Well, we're getting down to our last few minutes, a couple last practical things, perhaps.
It also, beside what you do in your own individual life, work with your groups and organizations and your community that you live in and that you belong to. Help other people wake up and take action. If you take one action today that you haven't done before and do it tomorrow and the next day as well, then in a few days it'll become customary. And then add another action, and then add another action, and then add another action. Long ago, Pete Seeger had a song about peace that said two and 50 make a million. And I think that's what it's going to take. If we're going to turn the climate around, it's going to be up to us, the ordinary people like you and me, who develop concern and maybe a passionate concern like I have, to say, look, we need to make changes here. And then we act on that at every possible level. We buy green. We invest green. We eat locally so the food doesn't have to be transported. We talk to our council persons. I talked to my mayor, Chris Coos, and I said, why aren't you on the list of cities? Why isn't Normal on the list of cities that has signed the Kyoto Protocol support? And he said, I'm way ahead of you, Carolyn. I went to the Climate of Mayors, and I've signed the Mayor's Climate Agreement, which has more stringent actions. And he'll be talking to us about that next Thursday as part of Focus the Nation activities at ISU, how Normal is turning green. I know you have a pretty green town and a pretty supportive leadership. So it's our efforts. I am concerned about our nation, and I don't hear any presidential candidate really stepping up to the plate on this. I think the demand to do so is going to come from us, the constituents.
And some are certainly better than others.
Yes.
Well, we do appreciate very much you're not only volunteering to be on this program free to share this information, but also to go to various service clubs, community centers, religious organizations, and make these presentations on this. Again, Carolyn Treadway.
Thanks a lot,
has been trained by Al Gore's The Climate Project.org. You can get information at that website, or you can email her to arrange for her to give a presentation in your location in near central Illinois, or to put you in touch with people other farther away. Carolyn@planetcare.us.
And
Steve.
Carolyn is LYN.
That's right, carolyn@planetcare.us. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Let me just let people know again, coming up here on Keeping the Faith next week, we'll be hearing from Heidi Weatherford and a couple others talking about civil unions and getting an Illinois law in the state authorizing civil unions so that gay folks can have some of the same benefits that opposite-sex couples can have in marriage. Later on Keeping the Faith, Jean Murray Walker will be reading her poetry in February. In March, we'll be hearing about the secular and religious divide in Israel. In April will be April 27th, having a discussion on Tolstoy's The Death of Ivan Illich with Rabbi Norman Klein and Elihu Smith from the Prairie Zen Center for the Big Read Project. So if you haven't bought your copy of The Death of Ivan Illich by Tolstoy, do pick it up. We'll be having an on-air discussion of that book April 27th. I want to close by reading a short version of my pledge that Joan Humphrey Lefkow and I wrote. Pledge to the planet. We pledge ourselves to the earth that sustains us all and to the land, air, water, and sun on which our future rests. One fragile creation in our hands to preserve and protect with freedom, equality, justice, and peace for all. Pledge to the planet. I'm Steve Shoemaker, and thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.